What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is Dr. Joel Hoffman, author of the new book, The Bible Doesn't Say That, 40 Biblical Mistranslations, Misconceptions, and Other Misunderstandings. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our two Jewish Mavina on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our Shinshinim Barel Kachar and Leah Avuno, and our Maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. I returned last week from an amazing rabbinic mission trip to East Central Europe with a group of Reform rabbis and spouses, connecting at a high level with three fascinating Jewish communities in Vienna, Budapest, and Prague. We also learned a great deal about the rise of right-wing anti-Semitism there and extreme right-wing populism in this sensitive region. I'll talk more about the trip over the next couple of weeks, including the attitude there towards Syrian refugees. That's an area where they are far more likely to arrive than here in the U.S. All three Jewish communities are now affirming Jewish identity under challenging conditions in new and often surprising ways. But this morning, I'd like to begin by discussing something that made big headlines both in Central Eastern Europe and here in America. The controversy over International Holocaust Day and the statement issued by President Donald Trump has not died down. In spite of the nonstop media furor his many more material actions have engendered since the inauguration on January 20th, Trump's International Holocaust Day message did not include any reference to Jews or Jewish victims of the Nazis, a most unusual omission for a day that commemorates the liberation of the Auschwitz-Birkenau death camp, where well over 1 million Jewish victims of Hitler were murdered, as part of the 6 million Jews martyred by the Germans and their collaborators during World War II. As is now customary when egregious errors are made, Trump's White House neither apologized nor backed down, saying that Jews had been omitted from the statement on purpose because other victims also suffered and died in the Holocaust. That's an explanation that, while true, minimized the effects of a genocide that killed 2/3 of the Jewish population of Europe. Holocaust denial is alive and well in the highest offices of the United States, said Deborah Lipstadt, the acclaimed historian and expert on Holocaust denial and protagonist of the recent film Denial, and a past guest here on Too Jewish. There was a great deal of criticism from all political quarters of this omission of Jews from the statement. In contrast to previous presidential statements on International Holocaust Remembrance Day by Presidents Obama and George W. Bush, the omission of Jews in a short statement about an event commemorating the Shoah is distressing. It is not close to the worst thing happening right now, but it is indicative of a consistent approach to issues and problems in which the President of the United States demonstrates no ability to self-correct, as all sane adults must. I used to wonder why Trump always chose to dig deeper every time he said something egregiously wrong, such as when he attacked the Gold Star Khan family last summer with their Muslim American hero son who won a Bronze Star, dying courageously in order to protect his men. Or when Trump pretends now that his most outrageously, well, false statements, claiming the media doesn't cover terror attacks, or equating Vladimir Putin's deliberate, dedicated evil with the way America conducts itself in the world, are justified, and that anyone who disagrees with him is a fraud and liar. I thought it was just a personality quirk of Trump's, an autocrat who did not believe he could ever be wrong. But now it seems clear that this is not only his personal approach to others, but his deliberate policy as president. When you are knee-deep in the big muddy, keep digging deeper and pretend you are right and everyone else is crooked, a failure, and lying. Including those of us who correctly believe that the Holocaust destruction of half the Jews alive in the world by the Nazis actually targeted Jews. I hope that our president or his close advisors come to realize that this kind of error is best addressed by correcting it, not by digging deeper. America is great in part because we have actual moral values, and telling the truth has to be central to that identity. Our play-in this morning comes from the fusion group The Epichorus, combining Syrian Jewish music and classic Hebrew text with Arabic rhythms and instruments. This is their version of Ana Bekoach, the most mystical Kabbalistic prayer of all, composed in the first century by Rabbi Nechunya ben Hakana. They call their composition Na Gibor.
Ana Bekoach Gedula Yemincha tatirzerura Kambelina tamlecha Sangvenu tarenu nora Anna bechoha kitula
That was the group The Epichorus and their song Na Gibor. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish, Dr. Joel Hoffman, is a translator, author, and scholar of Hebrew and the Bible, whose new book tells us the Bible doesn't say that. Find out what it doesn't say and why we think it does when we return in just a moment here on Two Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
Hi, my name is Lauriella, and I'd like to tell you how you can help send children like me to a Jewish day school at no cost to you. Arizona allows its taxpayers to receive a tax credit for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations such as JETCO. JETCO is the only tuition organization solely dedicated to Jewish education in Tucson. JETCO provides scholarships to children who attend qualified private schools like Congregation Anshai Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, which educates students from grades K through 8th. You may give up to $1,087 for single tax filers and $2,173 for married couples who file jointly. Jewish education nurtures Jewish identity for generations of students like me, so please go online and visit our website at www.jetco.org or give JETCO a call at 647-8442. Again, that's 647-8442. And tell them Lauriella sent you.
We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Dr. Joel Hoffman is an acclaimed translator, biblical scholar, and author. His new book is called The Bible Doesn't Say That. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning. It's a treat to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you back. So what prompted you to approach this question this way? There's certainly lots of us who think that the way that the Torah, the Tanakh, the New Testament are interpreted has very little to do with the original text. But why attack it now?
Well, I actually would quibble with the word attack. I hope I'm not attacking anybody or anything. What I'm trying to do is show people the original beauty of the Bible. I think the Bible, and by this I mean both the Old Testament and the New Testament, though of course for me personally the Old Testament has prominence. I think they're brilliant. I think they're no matter what else you believe, they are great, great works that have been hidden by years of distortion.
What do you think, and maybe this is sort of an obvious question, everybody reinterprets the Bible in his or her own way based on his or her own life. Why do you think so many significant kind of reinterpretations have kind of twisted the text?
I think in a sense that's the job of religion. For religion to stay relevant, it has to keep reinventing the text, and that's what religion does. I actually don't have a problem with religious leaders who reinterpret the text. I do have a problem with religious leaders who hide the fact that they're reinterpreting the text. And I can give you some examples if you'd like.
Yes, please.
Probably the biggest example is homosexuality. You have, for example, Pastor Joel Osteen, who goes on Piers Morgan's show on CNN and says that the Bible calls homosexuality a sin. Well, it doesn't. Surprisingly, Piers Morgan didn't ask the pastor to show us where it says that. He wouldn't have been able to. The Bible doesn't call homosexuality a sin. Now, I, unlike some of my colleagues, actually have no problem with Pastor Osteen interpreting the text the way he sees fit. He's a religious leader, and that's not only his right, it's his obligation. My frustration is when he hides the fact that what he's doing is interpreting the text to point in a direction that he wants. And he's not the only one doing this. Pastor Rick Warren in California does the same thing. And again, I think it's his right to interpret the text. I just think he owes it to the people he's speaking to be honest that he's interpreting the text and not merely reporting. And I go through this in the book.
Yeah, I was thinking the Hebrew word is toevah, which doesn't mean a sin. It's kind of an abomination. What do you think they meant by that originally?
The Hebrew word toevah is interesting because, in fact, it does not mean abomination. What it means is taboo. The difference being that an abomination is something that is universally inappropriate, whereas a taboo is something that is culturally inappropriate. But in spite of that interesting tidbit about the word toevah, I don't think it really affects the impact of Leviticus. Leviticus absolutely frowns on male homosexual sex. But the leap from discouraging male homosexual sex to saying that all of homosexuality is a sin is a double mistake because it doesn't address all of homosexuality and it doesn't call it a sin.
Fascinating. We will come back with Dr. Joel Hoffman in just a moment. We will return here on To Jewish. We welcome our friends David and Pamela from Freedom Smoke. Good morning.
Hey,
good morning.
Rabbi.
Quitting smoking, big part of your lives.
Yeah, it's very important. When we started this company just over 6 years ago, it was because I had a really bad cigar habit, and it was time for me to quit. We have 7 children, our youngest just turned 8, and I wish to be around to watch them all grow up and have successful careers and family of their own.
And Pamela, it's better personally, isn't it?
Yeah, most definitely. I'm a non-smoker, and being with a person who smokes cigars in particular, it's much nicer. His body doesn't reek of it, his hair does not reek of it, his clothes do not smell of it, and there's no tobacco between his teeth anymore.
And you don't have to send him for extra showers or
no,
out in the rain.
No extra showers.
How can people find out more about Freedom Smoke?
You can look us up on our website at freedomsmokeusa.com or call us on our toll-free number, 1-800-705-7013. That's 800-705-7013.
Thanks so much.
Thanks,
Thank
Rabbi.
You.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or akfel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, streaming us from twojewishradio.com or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as podcast, top 10 Jewish podcasts in America, according to Moment magazine. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We spoke last week about the kind of over-perception of the numbers and influence of Jews in the world. We were talking about Mexico last week, but you can make that case for so many other places where people wildly overestimate Jewish influence. I remember in Japan, where there's almost never been any kind of a Jewish community, the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, the classic piece of anti-Semitic propaganda that talks about the great influence of Jews, is still a bestseller in Japanese.
Right.
You've had some experiences of this.
Well, and I mean, we've both had experience of that in our own country, where Americans consistently overestimate the percentage of Jews in the population and the amount of control and influence that Jews exercise. You're from L.A., of all places. I mean, you're probably intimately familiar
with
this.
We own the entertainment industry, by God. You know, in general, the whole concept that Jews are controlling banking, which Jews have never controlled, or that we are, you know, running foreign relations, or all of these sort of strange perceptions. There are certain industries where Jews have concentrated. We, after all, invented the film industry, more or less. But that's because we couldn't get into any of the legitimate businesses. You know, it's often the case that Jews innovatively did stuff. I'm thinking about parts of the world where there have never been any Jews or very few Jews.
Right. So, I mean, one interesting example is Korea, which we've talked about before. It's a close American ally. It's a democracy. It's very successful economically. And yet, on the Pew Index of anti-Semitism, it consistently scores higher than almost any other country in the world, including most of the Arab countries, yes, which make a cottage industry out of hating Jews. I mean, South Korea is really right up there with the worst of the Arab states in terms of hatred of Jews, not necessarily hatred of Israel,
right?
Which is an interesting difference. But, and part of that is because a lot of Koreans are fundamentalist Christians in Protestant denominations, so they haven't been untaught the notion that the Jews killed their Lord. The Catholic Church has retracted that, and apparently most priests around the world, even in rural places, no longer teach that, that Jews are responsible for the crucifixion of Jesus. And that has been traditionally a major source of anti-Jewish feeling. But, you know, to look at another country that we don't often think about in terms of anti-Semitism, China actually traditionally welcomed Jews and was a home, a place of refuge for many Jews fleeing the Nazis,
who took Shanghai,
the Trans-Siberian Railroad all the way across, right, and lived there and survived the war thanks to Chinese hospitality. But even today, one of my best former students spent recently, I don't know, 5 or 6 years living and working in China, and eventually married a Chinese woman. And although they got to know each other in the city of Chengdu, which is a big city, 15, 16 million people, the capital of Sichuan province, she came from a little village in the mountains outside of Chengdu. And the first time my friend and former student Zach met her parents, they were so happy to learn that he was Jewish, because Chinese unquestioningly believe that Jews are very good with money, Jews are smart, Jews are good providers, they make good husbands, and they were happy that their future grandchildren would be prosperous and well-educated and well-cared for solely based on the knowledge that Zach was Jewish.
Amazing. Well, I mean, there's some advantages to this, I suppose, but it's so interesting to see that some of these ideas continue to persist in places where you wouldn't have ever expected them to be.
Right, and where there have never been any Jews to speak of.
Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
We welcome our Mivinan Israel, the head of the Wine Tribe Israel Center, Oshrat Barel. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
We are approaching the 50th anniversary of the Six-Day War, and you've been preparing a class on that at Temple Emmanuel, which starts this week. What observations, what new insights have you gained in getting ready to talk about this incredibly important event in Jewish history and Israeli history?
I think it's two main things, and that's why we have two meetings. One, to discuss all the background, what led to the 67 war. And I can tell you that it starts from the early 19th century, like, because it's all kind of different processes that happen in Saudi Arabia and Jordan and Egypt, and all kind of different processes that, you know, were parallel processes, and eventually affected, you know, what Egypt planned. Egypt thought that she is very ready to attack and destroy Israel once and for all by Nasser. But so this will be the first meeting talking about all these processes of, you know, up to 50 years. The second thing that will be the second meeting on the 22nd will be more how the 67 outcome of the war in so many terms affect us today. If it's the territories, if it's Jerusalem place in a Jewish state, if it's even moving them the American embassy to Jerusalem, all really timely issues, how they connected to the 67. So it's going to be interesting.
Should be fascinating. You know, people didn't know the term the West Bank until after the 67 war. The Gaza Strip was controversial. The thing that I think people really don't understand is this wasn't, so much of it was an accident. You know, from the Israeli perspective, they were just trying to survive. And then suddenly they had the whole of the Sinai, the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, the Golan Heights. What was the phrase they said?
See you in Damascus.
See you in Damascus. Right?
Not, it nearly not in happened. Egypt.
Not in Cairo. Nobody thought they were going to Cairo. They thought they were going to Damascus. So much of that was accidental, and now we think it was all inevitable, that it was meant to happen.
And I will focus on Gaza because, you know, Gaza, it was the unwanted gift from Egypt, and when we wanted to give them back, they didn't want
Egypt
Gaza.
Egypt didn't want Gaza back,
anyway,
right.
And it became our problem. So we will talk also about it, but I won't give it...
You don't want to give away the whole class.
No.
You know, for Israelis, this 50th anniversary is going to be very interesting. You know, up until 1967, the Kotel, the Western Wall, was a dream. Jews couldn't go pray there. The Jewish quarter was destroyed and was left in ruins by the Jordanians after 48. It's so different now.
It's so different. And let me just finish this with a personal feeling this year, because, you know, it's 50 years and you think like everyone will do a big deal out of it and we'll celebrate it. And I felt myself that it's kind of a controversial. Not everyone around the Jewish community feel it's something that you want to celebrate out loud. And this is something to think about it.
Absolutely. And something to discuss. Thanks so much, Oshrat. We'll talk next
week. Thank you, Rabbi.
Oshrat will be teaching a class at Temple Emmanuel on the 15th of February, 22nd of February. Call 520-327-4501 to register. We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Boker Tov, John.
Boker Tov.
Oh, boy. Exciting.
I do that with the kids. Yes. Oh, yeah. Chag Sameach. Tu Bishvat.
So Tu Bishvat is known as the New Year for trees, which means for most Jews, like, really? That's an actual holiday? And the answer is yes.
Our Arbor Day.
Arbor Day.
You know, I remember as a kid.
Don't even have Arbor Day anymore in America.
Well, Earth Day now, right?
Yeah,
it's expanded. It's not just for trees anymore.
Yeah, it's not just for trees.
I went, as a kid, I grew up in anti-Israel, right? And so in their preschool, we planted a tree. And I remember a little jingle. It went something like, Tu Bishvat is here, the birthday of the trees. So that's all the singing I'll do today,
Thank
ladies
you very
and gentlemen.
Much.
So don't change the channel.
Key. So what do you guys do for this, to be honest, fairly obscure Jewish holiday at Tucson Hebrew Academy?
Well, you know, like many holidays, there is, and just like Jewish practice in general, we are an engaged religion. We're a people who do. And so there is great doing happening for Tu Bishvat. We're partnering with a synagogue to plant some trees. We hope to plant a citron tree, maybe get some etrogs out of that down the line. Could be exciting.
By Sukkot? I don't think this Sukkot, but one Sukkot.
Maybe in 7 years, depending on the regulations. But so we do some physical work. There are beautification projects. There are classes that study in science the life cycle of plants. So, you know, kids sprouting beans, for example, things like that. So it's not just a holiday that is specific to Judaics or, you know, one aspect of the curriculum. There are so many things we can do when it comes to studying nature, knowing about the earth, environmental awareness and education, the life cycle of plants and organisms, bacteria, etc. So there are lots of potential study topics that come along with this theme.
And, you know, it's fascinating because it gives you a great access. There's so many Jewish texts about the environment, about our stewardship of the world, our responsibility to preserve the land. So it gives you a chance to teach in Hebrew and English and pull up sources.
It's a universal opportunity.
And then you get the tactile learning where you get to, like, plant stuff in the ground.
Right. And who doesn't remember as a kid sprouting something? You know, I put that there and it grew. Wow.
Yeah. What did we plant? Something that grew really, really fast.
Yeah.
Or maybe an avocado seed or something. Depends where you were.
Our younger kids will plant things like brassica grass and beans that grow, you know, the bean pole thing.
Yeah, the beans that do well. And then it also connects us to Israel, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You know, and I think this Tu B'Shvat, there's going to be some extra special resonance with the fires that happened, and extra tree planting and some care there. And a plug for the organization that does that.
The Jewish National Fund.
That's right. JNF. Can't live without it.
Thanks so much, John. Chag Sameach.
Chag Sameach. Enjoy, everybody.
When we return on To Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
If you or a loved one is dealing with a cancer diagnosis, managing the healthcare maze might be one of the hardest things you ever do. We're Advocation Services, private patient advocates serving Tucsonians living with cancer. We focus on helping you while you focus on getting better. Visit us at advocationservices.com or call us at 616-0005.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by To Jewish as a public service. In the interests of interfaith understanding, a synagogue brings a Christian minister in to talk to a Jewish confirmation class. The minister says, "Our most important religious observance is Easter. What do you kids know about Easter?" A girl, Sarah, raises her hand and replies, "That's the holiday that comes in the autumn. It's celebrated with a big feast. Everybody gives thanks for their blessings for the whole year." No, the minister says, "That's Thanksgiving. Anybody else?" A boy, Isaac, raises his hand and the minister says, "What can you tell me about Easter?" And Isaac says, "Oh, that's the holiday in the winter where everybody celebrates the birth of Jesus and gives gifts to each other." Again, the minister shakes his head. No, that's not it. Anyone else? A girl, Shira, raises her hand. "Great," says the minister. "What can you tell me about Easter?" And Shira answers, "That holiday comes in the spring. It celebrates Jesus' death on the cross. They put him in a cave and put a big rock in front of it to seal it." "Fantastic," says the minister, relieved. "You know something. Keep going." And Shira says, "On the third day, the rock was rolled away. Jesus came out, saw his shadow, and there was 6 more weeks of winter." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of To Jewish just for you. You should live and be well and enjoy the fact that there won't be 6 more weeks of winter here in southern Arizona where I live. And now a word of Torah. Can you recite the Ten Commandments by heart? I suspect not. Most of us can't. We usually remember, "Thou shalt not murder," often misstated as "thou shalt not kill," and "thou shalt not steal." Most people kind of recall there's something about honoring father and mother and not swearing. Others might get the adultery part, or perhaps even observing the Sabbath. Few people remember all 10 of the commandments. But whether we know them by heart or not, these 10 statements from this week's Torah portion of Yitro are supposed to be the only words God ever spoke directly to our people. But they are not really at the heart of Judaism today. Why not? In point of fact, Reform Jews have trouble with many of the ten, struggle to find relevant ways to observe them. Nearly every commandment brings with it a challenge, even the most positively phrased. What does it mean to remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy if we spend most of Shabbat working? I recall attending the Reform Movement URJ Biennial Convention in Toronto a few years back, hearing then-President Rabbi Eric Yaffe thank the delegates at services for celebrating a non-wired Shabbat, free of iPhones. His remarks were immediately posted on Facebook by many of the delegates using the same smartphones they were supposed to have put away for Shabbat. When I attended Sabbath services 2 weeks ago in Budapest, the security guard confiscated all of our cell phones on the way in, returning them only after services. Shabbat, it turns out, is challenging in this electronic connected world. Nearly all of the commandments have complications. How are we to suitably honor our fathers and mothers if they are difficult people or abusive? Not murdering or stealing seems clear enough, but how can we possibly avoid being jealous of our neighbor's better job or nicer car? And don't we take God's name in vain all the time without apparent repercussion? But I believe that the commandment we have the gravest difficulty observing among Reform, Liberal, Conservative, Reconstructionist, Progressive, and all the other non-Orthodox Jews is actually the first one. It's the simple statement that there is a God who commands us at all. Classically, this first statement, which contains no apparent commandment to fulfill, has been considered by Christians to be a kind of preamble to the Ten Commandments, but we Jews have always insisted on viewing it as a unique and critical statement. Why? It is because, as logical as the Aseret HaDibrot may seem as a declaration of ethics, if we do not accept the existence of a mitzvah, a commander, they lose their power. With no mitzvah, no commander, there is no mitzuveh, no recipient of command. In practical terms, there are no real mitzvot, no commandments to be kept. In philosophical terms, the warrant for the authority of the Ten Commandments is in this simple statement. God exists, God acts, and God commands. It's why they are not called the Ten Suggestions, or the Ten Recommendations, or the Ten Nice Ideas, if you can manage them. It is only when we accept the existence of God, when we diminish our own elaborate sense of self, only then are we able to partner with God to create a moral world. Only when we engage with the commander do we find the commandments. It is up to us, on this week of Parshat Yitro, to find for ourselves the one who commanded them, however we conceive of the Holy One of God, and to accept our role as recipients of ethical commandment. When we choose to do so, we will find that we can then be moral beings. We can shape this world in good ways. We can observe the Ten Commandments just as they were intended to be observed by heart. When we return on to Jewish, our guest, Dr. Joel Hoffman, biblical scholar, linguist, and author, explains the reason for his new book, The Bible Doesn't Say That, and explores some of the things we think the Bible says that it doesn't. Find out what those are when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through eighth grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
If you or a loved one is dealing with a cancer diagnosis, managing the healthcare maze might be one of the hardest things you ever do. We're Advocation Services, private patient advocates, serving Tucsonans living with cancer. We focus on helping you while you focus on getting better. Visit us at advocationservices.com or call us at 616-0005.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Anish Kapoor, an influential and innovative artist, as well as a longtime social activist, was named the winner of the 2017 Genesis Prize. Kapoor, the son of a Baghdadi Jewish mother and Indian father, was tapped last week for the so-called Jewish Nobel. He joins Yitzhak Perlman, former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, and actor-director Michael Douglas as recipients of the $1 million prize. The Bombay native, who moved to Israel at 16 but has been based in the UK since the 70s, says he will use his award to help alleviate the Syrian refugee crisis and try to expand the Jewish community's engagement in a global effort to support refugees. More than 12.5 million Syrians have been displaced during the current conflict. 2.5 million of them are children. The Genesis Prize recognizes individuals who have attained excellence and international renown in their fields and whose actions and achievements express a commitment to Jewish values, the Jewish community, and the State of Israel. It is awarded by the Genesis Prize Foundation in partnership with the Office of the Prime Minister of the State of Israel and the Jewish Agency for Israel. Kapoor's works include Turning the World Upside Down at the Israel Museum in Jerusalem, Cloud Gate at Chicago's Millennium Park, and The Orbit in London. Kapoor also created the Holocaust Memorial for the Liberal Jewish Synagogue in London and the 70 candles for Holocaust Memorial Day in Britain in 2015, commemorating the 70th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. We just commemorated the 72nd anniversary a couple weeks ago. For many years, Kapoor, who was knighted in 2013 in Britain, has been a public advocate for the cause of refugees and for displaced people around the world. He recently visited Syrian refugees in the Za'atari refugee camp as part of UNICEF's art therapy program, intended to help children who have witnessed atrocities express themselves through art. Jewish identity and history have witnessed recurring conditions of indifference, persecution, and Holocaust, Kapoor said. Repeatedly, we have had to repossess ourselves and re-identify our communities. As inheritors and carriers of Jewish values, it is unseemly for us to ignore the plight of people who are persecuted, who have lost everything and had to flee as refugees in mortal danger. Outsider consciousness resides at the heart of Jewish identity, and this is what motivates me while accepting the honor of the Genesis Prize to re-gift the proceeds to refugee causes. I am an artist, not a politician, and I feel I must speak out against indifference for the suffering of others. He added, I appeal to people of good conscience in the global Jewish community and those outside it who share this sentiment and cannot remain passive and silent to join the call of the Genesis Prize, help save lives, and give refugees an opportunity to return to normal life. Natan Sharansky, chairman of the executive of the Jewish Agency and head of the Genesis Prize Selection Committee, said that Anish Kapoor has campaigned against indifference his whole life. His message is clear, powerful, and inspiring. I am confident that Anish will use the Genesis Prize to build on the good work already being done by Jews in this area, and his voice and energy will help to focus more people on the need to alleviate the suffering of refugees. That was some Super Bowl. One of the champion New England Patriots' most valuable players and quarterback Tom Brady's favorite wideout is Julian Edelman, who could safely be called the best active Jewish player in the NFL. With Edelman playing a starring role, the Pats mounted an amazing comeback from 25 points behind to beat the Atlanta Falcons 35-28 in overtime in Super Bowl 51. Edelman made one of the greatest catches in football history late in the fourth quarter, a kind of Nes Gadol Hayasham, a great miracle happening there, at least if you are a New England Patriot fan. The ball bounced off of two Atlanta players, then again off the leg of one of them, was juggled and then grabbed not once but twice with spectacular concentration an inch above the ground by Julian Edelman. The catch was crucial to the greatest comeback in football history and one of the greatest in all of sports. Until recently, there was some debate over whether Edelman was Jewish. The Patriots said he was raised Christian despite having a Jewish father, but since identifying himself as a member of the tribe during a 2013 interview on the NFL Network, Julian Edelman has shown his Jewish pride a number of times, visiting Israel, inaugurating the new Boston to Tel Aviv service, and tweeting out a happy Passover photo of himself catching a large matzah. On the current list of American Jewish Historical Society's 10 best Jewish football players, admittedly not the longest or deepest list, Julian Edelman was ranked behind only Hall of Famers Sid Luckman, Ron Mix, and Benny Friedman. Mazel tov to Julian Edelman and Jewish owner Robert Kraft on the Patriots' Super Bowl triumph, and condolences to the Falcons' Jewish owner Art Blank on their heartbreaking loss. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Round the World. We welcome back the two Jewish art guests this morning. Dr. Joel Hoffman is an author, an expert on biblical text and on liturgy. His My People's Prayer Book series was an extraordinary success and won a National Jewish Book Award. His new book is called The Bible Doesn't Say That, 40 Biblical Mistranslations, Misconceptions, and Other Misunderstandings. We've explored a couple, and I'd love to explore some more. In Christian theology, the rapture has taken on a huge role, and I guess it always did, but boy, it seems like it's become more and more prominent in evangelical Christianity. Can you explain some of the misconceptions associated with the original text on that? Or I should probably say texts.
Yeah, there are a bunch of texts, and again, I go through them in detail in the book. It would be a little bit difficult to go through all of the nuances on the radio without pointing to the different texts, because there's more than one, as you say, and they're not the simplest of texts. But the overall pattern that we see is that the rapture, as people now understand it, is something that was invented in reasonably recent times. It's a modern invention, a modern rereading of the text, and in that sense, it's a perfect example of what I'm talking about, in that religion has always reinvented the text. Both Judaism and Christianity has been reinventing and reinterpreting the text for thousands of years. And this is, again, another example of that. My personal frustration, I think a lot of people's frustration when they find out, is that some of the leaders hide the fact that what they're doing is interpreting the text rather than reporting. There is no rapture as we now know it in the Bible.
So this will be a kind of a shock to people who will say, well, what about Revelations? But it isn't really described quite like that, is it?
It's not described like that. There is some language in Revelation that sounds a lot like the end of the world. And in fact, the book of Revelations is not the only book that does that from antiquity. It was a fairly common literary genre. But again, the leap from that to saying that something is actually going to happen, and here are the details, is a leap that you can only make through reinterpretation. You know, I'll give you another example that may be a little bit less emotionally charged, at least for some people. And that's the Jewish laws of keeping kosher. You know, most people know that the Jewish dietary laws prohibit certain things and certain combinations. And the most famous combination is milk and meat. The Jewish dietary laws are sort of well known to prohibit eating milk and meat together. That's not in the Bible. Excuse me. The Bible does contain a hint of that, saying that you're not allowed to boil a kid in its mother's milk. And I should be clear, a kid is a baby goat, not a baby child.
Yes, thank God.
Yes, but the leap from not cooking a baby goat in its mother's milk to not having any milk and meat together at all is an issue of interpretation. Now, mainstream Judaism has accepted that interpretation, and I have no problem with that interpretation, and I respect people who follow that interpretation. My point is, I think that a lot of people living in modern times would like to know what's an interpretation and what is the original text.
You know, when I think about the fact that we always are usually are looking at a text in translation, you are an accomplished translator, you know that any translation has some hint of interpretation. There's no even word that's exactly the same in any two languages. Is some of this simply a matter of looking at a third, fourth, fifth, seventh different linguistic translation?
Some of it is, though. I actually think the degree to which all interpretation is fraud has been overstated. It's true that no translation is perfect. I think I may have said interpretation.
Yeah.
It's true that translation...
Now, wait a minute. Your translations aren't perfect. Let's be honest here.
Oh, I appreciate your saying that. My translations try and do something different than most biblical translations. Most Bible translators are doing two things at the same time. They're trying to translate, and they're trying to offer theology or put a spin on the text. And yet again, I have no problem with that. Maybe the clearest example is the Catholic Church's official translation of the Bible that still has the English kill in the Ten Commandments.
Right,
says,
instead
you
of
shall
murder.
Not kill.
Right, for Tirzah.
Now, in point of fact, neither kill nor murder is an accurate translation, but of the two, murder is much closer than kill. The original text of the Ten Commandments did not address legal killing. It was only about illegal killing. Now, the church, on the other hand, would like to promulgate the idea that it is wrong for any human to take any other human being's life, and to help do that, they have a translation that is purposely slightly inaccurate. Now, that's the job of the church, and that's what the church is supposed to do. They're supposed to use the text to promote their theology. But I think people living in the modern world would also, side by side, like as accurate a translation as possible for the original text. And that's what I do. And the truth of the matter is, it is possible to get a very accurate translation. So even though there are some things that will be inaccurate, most of the inaccuracies are small and can be fixed with small parenthetical notes. So I do think it's possible to get an accurate translation. And in fact, that's what my first mainstream book was about, was finding that accurate translation.
You know, whenever I teach Genesis, I always explain that you can't really understand the first three words of the Torah, which is the first three words of all Western religious literature, without interpreting them, because there's sort of a grammatical jump in there. It forces us into the text. So this is a healthy part of our experience of biblical text, isn't it?
I think it absolutely is. And again, there are two things I think it's helpful to keep in mind side by side. On the one hand, there's a lot of interpretation in the first three words, going back at least 1,000 years to probably the most famous Jewish biblical commentator, to Rashi. But what Rashi was doing was interpreting. He wasn't just giving us the grammatical sense of the text. The truth is, and I address this in my most recent book as well, we do have a very good understanding of what those three words meant before they were interpreted. So side by side, we have a pretty easy way to figure out the original meaning of the text, and also an evolution to the text that is, for most people, much more important, because that's how they go about doing their religion.
When you were preparing this book, what jumped out at you? What surprised you? Which misinterpretation or mistranslation was sort of the most egregious?
I don't know about most egregious, though certainly the two mistranslated commandments in the Ten Commandments would be good candidates. The Ten Commandments don't address legal killing, and the Ten Commandments don't address coveting or desiring. They only address taking. But in terms of what surprised me most, I think it's when I started looking at...
No, I want you to back up to that. So the last two commandments in the Jewish counting, it's a little different in the Catholic, or the, it doesn't really matter. In the two commandments that deal with the question of coveting, how would you translate that?
The verb there means take, and we have very, very solid, in fact, overwhelming evidence that it means take. So the commandment is not...
Don't take your neighbor's house. Don't take your neighbor's stuff.
That's right. And the evidence for this is actually very, very clear and overwhelming. I actually have an online video. It's only about 2.5 minutes, and I'm pretty sure the name of the website that hosts it is exploringthebiblevideos.something. It might be .com or it might be .org, but I have an Exploring the Bible video that in 2.5 minutes goes through the overwhelming evidence, in addition to a chapter on this in the book.
You use art as a very interesting metaphor for biblical interpretation, talking about Monet's many, many paintings of water lilies, having seen them, each slightly different. You would never argue that they were exactly the same painting. He's painting the same thing. It's a great analogy for the way that we interpret. But don't we have to start with water lilies? In other words, isn't there some basis in the translation that you kind of have to have undergirding everything you're doing interpretively?
I think now there's a basis that we have to have because we live in modern times and we live in an era of truth and of science, and a lot of people are interested in the original meaning of the text. The water lilies come into play as an example of having more than one interesting or effective or important depiction of something. So just as you can have more than one painting of water lilies, and the wrong question, in fact, the idiotic question is which painting is right, because obviously they're all art and they're all right. They're all different depictions of the water lilies.
Well, it's the one that
Similarly,
I like, right? Isn't it always the one that I like that's the right interpretation?
Well, there is also that trend of people who are saying, well, the one I like is better than all of the others. And in fact, I respect that. People are allowed to like what they like. But no one is going to go through all of the water lily paintings and throw away and burn all but the right one yet. Some people, and this is mostly the professional atheists who do this, some people look at the Bible and say, well, look, we have two different depictions of something, therefore the whole Bible is worthless. And what's astonishing is that they do this for the Bible knowing full well they would never do this for art. In other words, they've made the mistake of thinking that the Bible is just a newspaper or a scientific column.
I have been a little bit stunned by the kind of really poor quality of the scholarship in some of the prominent atheist work on the Bible. Is that just ignorance or is that choice?
Well, I don't know. I don't want to speak for someone else. I can certainly say that reading what they write, it looks like the writing is ignorant. They have a facile understanding of the Bible, and then they use that facile understanding almost as a straw man to say the Bible has no value, which is very frustrating, I think, not just for people who think that the Bible is the Word of God, but it's frustrating for anyone who's ever studied literature or history. We would never let people get away with such a superficial analysis of something in any other realm. Though I don't know what's in their mind, obviously.
In the creation of Midrash, Judaism has a long and rich tradition of reinterpretation. And there are those people who think, many Jews, who think that Midrash is in the Bible. You know, Abraham destroying the idols, that must be in Genesis somewhere, things like that. You point out some of those. There's nothing wrong with Midrash, but is there a way of doing, say, what Rashi did, kind of screening Midrash to see if it doesn't completely violate the text?
This notion of Midrash, of interpreting the text, has been going on for 2,000 years and is central not just to Judaism, but also to Christianity, incidentally.
Of course.
And
by the way, Islam, too.
I know less about that, but I'll take your word for it. I don't think that there is any way in which you can violate the text. I think that any interpretation is going to change the meaning of the text, and that's what interpretation does. And words like violate or not, or phrases like not be true, don't really apply. In this sense, again, it's much more like art, though also very different than art in other ways. It's not as though any drawing of something can violate something. We know that from last century. You can take people's, you know, various limbs and put them in what scientists might call the wrong place, and that doesn't mean that the art is wrong. Sometimes it means the art is great. And the same thing is true of Midrash. Just because it's not the same as the original text doesn't mean that it has no value. Sometimes it can mean just the opposite, that it has enormous value.
I want to thank Dr. Joel Hoffman for expanding our understanding, as always, and clarifying our vision. His new book is called The Bible Doesn't Say That. You can find it, of course, where all books are sold, Amazon.com. And where can people go to find out more about you and about your work?
They can go to my website, which is www.lashon, that's LASHON.net. There's a page on there for contact, and I would love to hear from your listeners.
Thank you so much, Joel.
Thank you. It's been a treat.
When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday on Too Jewish. Our guest will be Rabbi Lior Bar-Ami, rabbi of Or Chadash Synagogue in Vienna, Austria, and the Liberal Synagogue in Toulouse, France, discussing Reform Judaism in Europe today. And, of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or at our TooJewishRadio.com website and friend us on Facebook. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes from the group The Epichorus and their song Libav Tini. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.